So the group here tonight is, what I understand is, like your core. Bhakti Vriksha Group members, there's more than one Bhakti Vriksha Group gathered together, is that right? Is any, like, new people, or you're all kind of not so new? You're a new people. Okay. Right. Not so new. You've been around a long time. What, at the Krishna house? Uh-huh. You a student there? Huh?
Working.
Okay. It's a good reason to stay at the Krishna house. Are you from Michigan? Okay. You know who is Krishna, right? You know who is Ramachandra, right? I mean, yeah. Yeah? Okay. I understand. I was asking, what do you do with your Bhakti Vriksha groups? And you usually, some do this and some do that. And last week was some dramas on Gaura Leela or something like that. So we could go back in time and speak Gaura Leela, go forward in time and speak Ram Leela, because it seemed to be a Leela mood. So I'm thinking, go forward with a Leela mood. That's why I asked if you know who is Ram. Okay. Ramayana, or the pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, they're all attractive, as he is all attractive. And I thought of speaking about a specific section of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes that I had the good fortune of experiencing while in South India. Rameshwaram and Dhanushkodi. Some of you are familiar with that. Now, one of the persons that was with our group, very kindly, he's the regional secretary for South India, for that area of South India. And his name is escaping me right now. What's his name? Starts with an S. My goodness, I'm embarrassed. Can't think of his name. He was with us for 5 days. Anyway, we went to a number of places, and because he's the regional secretary there, he knows these places very well. And he's Tamil speaking, because it was part of Tamil Nadu. And he pointed out that as we were entering and crossing that long bridge to go to Rameshwaram and Dhanushkoti, that in this part of where Ramchandra's pastimes took place, it's an area where there's no Sri Vaishnava temple, because there's Sri Vaishnava temples in so many of the other places that we went to. And one of the reasons, there may be other reasons, but one of the reasons is the pastime of Lord Ramachandra worshipping a Shiva Linga in Rameshwaram does not appear in Valmiki Ramayana. Did you know that? It's just not spoken about. Zero. And Sri Vaishnavas are, many of them, are worshippers of Lord Ramachandra, believers in Lord Ramachandra, and they have no temple there. And on the other hand, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited, that's why we visited, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur comments in the places where Lord Chaitanya visited, he comments elaborately on the pastime that took place in those places. I'm just sharing this as a, you know, I learned a lot by going to South India. I learned, not that I understood everything, but I learned a lot. And one of the mysteries of the pastime of Lord Ramachandra that he performed in Rameshwaram is something that confuses people, or confuses some people, confuses a lot of people. And that is, why is Lord Ramachandra worshipping Lord Shiva? It would appear, and some take it not only appears as a fact, it proves that Lord Shiva is supreme because you just see Lord Ramachandra is a worshipper of Lord Shiva. Anyone not heard that before besides you? So that's the topic. How do we as Vaishnavas, specifically Gaudiya Vaishnavas, how do we view that pastime? Even the name of the place, Rameshwaram, can be understood as Lord Shiva is the Lord of Ram, or Ram is the Lord of Lord Shiva. Rameshwara can be taken either way by, you know, Sanskrit language. Lord Shiva, who is the Lord of Ram, or Ram, who is the Lord of Lord Shiva. We take it that Ram is the Lord of Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is his worshipper. We have that understanding in a number of ways, including from the Leela, but specifically from Srimad Bhagavatam itself, which says, in one verse that says that Srimad Bhagavatam is the superlative of all literatures, it also says that Lord Shiva is the superlative of all Vaishnavas. And another one of the places that we visited, well, visiting holy places in South India, we visited Gurvayur, and it's in that very same place, Gurvayur, where the lake, or the sea, because long, long ago, when the pastime of the Prachetas entering into the sea to perform worship under the instruction of their father, King Pachinibari, Lord Shiva appeared from the lake or from the sea and then instructed them in a stotra, which he said he chants, and in the stotra which he chants, he's worshipping Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva, when he's in meditation, upon what or upon whom is he meditating? Answer, Lord Vishnu. So from our Srimad Bhagavatam, it's really easy. There's no confusion at all. Why was Lord Ram then worshipping Lord Shiva if Ram is worshipped by Lord Shiva? Well, there's a number of explanations from a Vaishnava point of view. Why did, for example, why did Krishna, when he was visited by Sudama, who is a Brahmana, why did he worship Sudama? It means Sudama is the supreme and Krishna is subordinate Sudama, right? Because Krishna worships Sudama. No. Krishna is honoring his devotee, and Krishna's showing by example that the king worships a brahmana. He shows all respect to the brahmana. It's a lila. It's a loving exchange. One of the most beautiful art pieces of artwork of all in our whole ISKCON paintings is that wonderful painting of Krishna's washing Sudama's feet, looking up at Sudama, and tears are coming from Krishna's eyes, and Sudama isn't paying any attention to Krishna washing his feet. He's just, his eyes are staring at Krishna's eyes, and tears are coming down his cheek. It's an exchange of love. And Sudama is allowing his dear friend, because the rasa is that of friendship, but Krishna is showing by example how does an ideal king conduct himself, and the ideal king worships the brahmana. So Krishna is worshipping, Sudama is accepting, but it's not, you know, he is superior and he is the lesser or inferior. It's not like that. It's an exchange of love. And similarly, this is one of the mysteries of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes. As with each of the Leela avatars, our acharyas described like this, Prabhupada certainly describes like this, each one of the Leela avatars, you know what that term means? Pastime? Buddha, Nrisimhadev, Vamana, Matsyakurma, Balaram Krishna, Parashuram with his chopper, Buddha. These are Leela avatars, the pastime avatars. It's one of the categories of avatars. So for each of the Leela avatars, there's some specific characteristic that they're exhibiting. And rather than detailing all of them, Ramchandra's specific characteristic is he's showing by example the ideal king. And as the ideal king, he appears like a human. He doesn't appear in half man, half lion, or Matsyakurma. He's human-like, and he exhibits human-like behaviors sometimes. He exhibits his divinity sometimes, but he exhibits human-like behavior sometimes, like making a mistake. That's a human characteristic. What was one of Ram's mistakes, some people say, is he left Sita so that Sita could be kidnapped by Ravan. And look at the trouble he went through. And it's a little Prabhupada story from Hyderabad. How many of you are from Hyderabad? Or say, when people ask you where you're from, you say, I'm from Hyderabad. Even though you're not. Okay, so it's a long story, but I'll make it shorter. During the time when Srila Prabhupada had accepted the land that was donated by Mr. Reddy, of all names, for Andhra Pradesh, Mr. Reddy, I don't know his first name, donated land to become the abbot's temple. And Prabhupada, from Mayapur, he brought a few hundred of us, I was selected to go, by train from Calcutta to Hyderabad to take part in a 1-week-long festival to prepare the city for the, you know, the presentation of a Hare Krishna temple in Hyderabad. And so he brought his white elephants, his American disciples, to go on Harinam Sankirtan for a whole week. And then in the evening, a Pandal program near the university. And it was a really interesting experience. We slept without tents out in the mud, right in the middle of the city, because you know where the temple is. Those of you that say that you're from Hyderabad, you know where the place is. We were right in the middle of everything, and, you know, with no toilets, no showers. We just, like, bucket of water on our head early in the morning when nobody's up, and latrines for, you know, answering the call of nature. And we did that for a week. And then, you know, had a morning program right on the dirt. And then, you know, prasadam, and then we went on Harinam. And then for lunch, different life members had invited us to go to their home, and, you know, all the devotees went to their home. Somehow they got us all to those places. And one of the days that we had lunch was at the home of the donor, Mr. Reddy, the man who donated the land, and he had this big house on a big piece of land with beautiful landscaping, and, you know, he was a well-to-do man. And I understood that Prabhupada was inside the house, so I hurried up and had next to no prasadam, and then went inside the house to listen to Prabhupada speak to the family members. So I just kind of snuck in and went and sat down quietly. And so Prabhupada was seated on one side, and it was like, you know, a very wealthy person's home sitting parlor, and over on the other side was his wife and some other elderly ladies. And they were questioning Prabhupada, Swamiji, why did Ram make a mistake? What mistake? He went chasing after that deer. And isn't he omniscient? He's God. He must have known that the deer wasn't the deer. It was a trick. So why did he make the mistake? And Prabhupada said something, and he said, yes, but Swamiji, you know, just went on hammering the point. And it wasn't a mistake, it was a lila. And, you know, yeah, but it was a mistake. How much did Sita suffer, and how much did he suffer? Surely it was a mistake. Swamiji, why did Ram make a mistake? And Prabhupada nodded at the sannyasis and said, he was teaching a lesson, and it's more or less written in his purport in Bhagavad Gita, but with these ladies he said it really bluntly. He said, any man who associates intimately with a woman is going to have a problem. And then they went on badgering Prabhupada. But Swamiji! So he just smiled, and the sannyasis understood, and the ladies didn't at all understand. They were just giving him trouble. A man who associates with a woman is going to have some trouble. That was the lesson. But Swamiji! You get the story. So, he apparently made a mistake. You know, he covered for the mistake. Well, he said, you know, even if it's a trick, even if it's some mystical thing arranged by the Rakshasas, I'm all powerful, and I'll understand it, and I'll be able to kill the deer. Rather than capture the deer and bring him back to, you know, bring him back to Ayodhya. And besides, Lakshman, you stay here. You just protect Sita. So what can the harm be? We know what happened, what Sita said, and what Lakshman felt, and Lakshman made Lakshman Rekha, the circle on the ground, don't step outside. Sita stepped outside and Ravana took her away. And then a whole big deal. In human-like way, another human-like, apparently, human-like way, Ram lost it. He was lamenting like an ordinary human being might lament. Whoa, whoa, I lost my girl. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, pop songs that are all about stuff like that. But it wasn't. The whole lila was an enactment of love and separation. And part of another grand lila for us to understand, as Prabhupada would say, you know, the atheists want to enjoy Sita without Ram. The atheists want to enjoy fortune without acknowledging the proprietor of that fortune. The material disease as wanting to enjoy the kingdom of God without God. And, you know, Ravan is just, you know, the chief example in a grand lila and display, with pride and hubris and arrogance and power and all of what made up his persona. And Ram destroyed him. And not only destroyed him, destroyed, you know, another purpose of Ramachandra's appearance was fulfilled. Vinashaya Chaduskritam. It was just part of a lila. The whole enactment is one grand lila, because even in his exchanges with different devotees, Ram would sometimes speak very clearly about his divinity. And sometimes persons in his association would very clearly address his divinity. And then in the next moment he would act as if he was one of us, and speak as if he was one of us, and seek counsel as if he was one of us. So what's the conduct? Just like Ram wanting to cross to Lanka. He sought the counsel of Vibhishan. Vibhishan said, well, you want to cross the ocean, then get assistance from the ocean personified. He will help you. Your previous ancestors, they created this ocean, which he is now ruling, and so he's obliged to you. So ask his help and he'll help you. Very reasonable. I mean, he's the Supreme Lord, he doesn't need anybody's help. He can create universes and destroy universes like that, but to speak across the ocean. He doesn't need anybody's help. But he asked Vibhishan's advice, and he followed Vibhishan's advice. And he did his fasting and austerities and all of that. And Samudra didn't respond. Who's this person? Anyway, we'll discuss some of that sometime later. But he's behaving as if he's one of us. Although, at the same time, he's the Supreme Lord. It's so when he behaves like one of us, it's to teach us. And those that don't understand the intimacy of love take his pastimes to be ordinary, which is to speak of Krishna. So some of you maybe have read, or at least have heard from someone who has read Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And when Gopal Kumar, I'm going to make a comparison from Brihat Bhagavatamrita about the position of Ayodhya, or maybe you've seen that chart that shows Goloka, below Goloka is Ayodhya. Ayodhya is in the upper region of Haridam. And then there's Haridam, the abode of Hari, the abode of Narayana. And below Haridam is Maheshdam, and below Maheshdam is Devidam. That's where we are. You know the verse from Brahma Samhita. Goloka namni nijadamni tadecha tasya devi maheshu haridamasu teshu teshu. The Goloka is the topmost abode. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, Lord Brahma is looking up. From his position, because he's within Devidam, he's looking up to, you know, in a vertical direction to the higher regions. Above and beyond Devidam is Maheshdam. Above Maheshdam is Haridam. So Ayodhya is in the upper regions of Haridam, or Vaikuntha region. And what makes it higher than the Vaikuntha region? And the answer is intimacy. And what makes Goloka higher still? Intimacy. Intimacy that progressively conceals or overwhelms the divinity. Because in Haridam, in Vaikuntha, Narayana is supremely opulent personality of Godhead. There's no confusion. Is he man or is he God? In Ram's Leela, his human-like nature is so prominent because he's the ideal king, he's human-like. Then there's relationships where he's apparently human-like and he does apparently human-like things. He performs pastimes where he goes mad in feelings of separation from Sita. He's the all-power Supreme Personality of Godhead. He has to go ask monkeys to help him get across the ocean or find Sita. Where is she? It's human pastime. It's humanness. It's pastime. Similarly, his worshipping of Lord Shiva. Now, why didn't he worship, you know, someone else? Why didn't he worship one of the Vishnu Tattva forms? He could have done that. He did what he did because Vishnu Tattva forms are Vishnu Tattva forms, and Lord Shiva is the greatest of all Vaishnavas, and he's honoring. Krishna likes to honor. It's his nature, and Ramchandra likes to honor his devotee. He doesn't need anybody's help, but he gives some service to his devotees. That's his kindness. If he wasn't kind, we'd be in big trouble. We'd just rot in the material world. You know, you so-and-so, you went away from me and you can rot in the material world. No, he's very kind. He gives service. With just, you know, this tiniest little, well, I think I'd like some service. Sure, here's some service. Or even before that, please take some service. He's just kind. And those who represent him are similarly kind to him. So the circumstance of Lord Ramachandra worshipping Lord Shiva goes like this. At some point in Ram's Leela, he destroys the entire Rakshasa race. And personally, after the Kumbhakarna and so many of his great, powerful generals are destroyed, Ram personally destroys Ravana. And it's a long battle, and it's like very exciting. And he shoots off his heads, and his heads appear again, and he shoots off his heads again, and his heads appear again, and so many things. But he pierces his heart. He finds from Vibhishan, what's the weakness? There's a special little embedded power that he has. He just pierces his heart and he's finished. Okay, so that's what he did. And then Sita and Ram are reunited, and Sita was tested, and then, okay, now Ram says to Vibhishan, I want to return very quickly to Ayodhya because my period of exile will soon be over and I don't want Bharata to destroy himself or my mother's to be in, you know, die out of anxiety for my welfare. I'd like to go back quickly. So he makes an arrangement to go back quickly. Pushpaka Vimana, this very wonderful celestial aeroplane that could expand and expand, and it's so nice. Ram, Lakshman, Sita, and Hanuman get on the Vimana. And all the Vanaras are looking and they want to go too. They want to see Ram coronated. So Vibhishan appeals and Sugriva appeals and all the Vanaras, the whole, you know, horde of army gets on this Vimana. It's very, you know, could expand. And as they're, it just by mind thought, it moves. So it rises in the air, And as they're rising in the air, Ram is describing, it basically is a retelling, there's so many retellings of Ramayana within Ramayana. There's where this battle was fought, that's where Kumbhakarna was killed, that's where Indrajit was killed, this hero killed this one, killed that one, and this is where Hanuman landed, and this is where he met Lankini, and had you know, just everything, the whole, and this is where his Hanuman's journey across the ocean, and then they get to the other side. And when they get to the other side, Ram decides that the Vimana should descend. And when the Vimana descends, they take their sacred bath at Dhanushkoti, and Ram makes certain pronouncements about the sanctity. One can become purified from sins for any number of lifetimes, which by the way happens when you just chant Krishna's name once, when you take bath at Dhanushkoti. And then Agastya Muni. So this is another thing that I learned while in South India. Agastya Muni and Atri Muni, those two in particular, they were very prominent in certain regions of South India during their lifetime. And so they appear again and again and again. In this case, Agastya Muni happened to be in the right place at the right time. He was in this, because it's this little protrusion of land. It's not like part of, like a peninsula kind of jutting out from the mainland of India. And Agastya Muni was there. And Agastya Muni is, he's a Brahmana, so he is honored by Ram. But Agastya Muni is honoring Ram as the personality of Godhead. He likes singing his glories one after the next, you know, like a retelling of Ramayana again. You did this and you did that, and you're by your mercy you've come here and sanctified this place just by placing your lotus feet in this tract of land. You've sanctified it by your presence. This is an exalted Muni speaking like this to Ram. He's honoring him as the personality of Godhead. So then Ram says, anyone who takes shelter of me will become purified. He speaks like that. He's like speaking like he's the personality of Godhead. And that you, sages who have taken shelter of me, you know, your sins are driven far away. You're already perfected souls and you're in this immaculate, sinless condition. And then he does a U-turn and says, I'm seeking your advice. Now he's the mortal. I'm seeking your advice. What should I do to atone for the sin of killing a Brahmana? Now what Brahmana is he talking about? Ravana. Wait a minute. Ravana is this nasty guy. The super demon. So how is it that, I mean, he killed him not because, similar to the advice in the Bhagavatam that Krishna gives to Arjuna about killing Ashwatthama. You know this from Canto 1, Chapter 5? Chapter 7. Krishna Arjuna captures Ashwatthama after he's killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. Right? And Arjuna brings him back, ready to kill him, right in front of Draupadi. So when the funeral of the sons, he took a vow, you can stand on the head of Ashwatthama while you're pouring ablutions into the fire. He's ready to kill him right in front of Draupadi. And Draupadi says, don't kill him. You've made the promise to me. I release you from that promise. Your vow is no longer binding you. Don't kill him. Then his elder brother, who he would never disobey, also says, don't kill him. Bhima says, kill him. And Krishna says, kill him. And Krishna says, don't think that by killing him you'll incur the sin of killing a brahmana, because although he was born of a brahmana, his behavior is abominable. His behavior is not the behavior of a brahmana. He's not a brahmana. If you kill him, it's not the sin of killing a brahmana. Kill him. Here, the obstacle removed. Kill him. So, what to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he kills a demon? The demon is liberated. But now he's behaving as if he's one of us, and the sin of killing a brahmana, who wasn't a brahmana by his conduct. But by birth he was a brahmana. So we're going to do the family tree a little bit. Lord Brahma, he is at the top of the tree. The first sons of Lord Brahma, who were they? Four Kumaras. And then after the four Kumaras, when they said, no, Dad, we don't want to get married, we want to stay brahmachari, he became angry. And then? Lord Shiva. And then after Lord Shiva, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatrurupa. And then the 10 great sages. One of those 10 great sages was Pulastya. Pulastya had a number of children. One of them was Vishrava. Now over here, this is the Daitya dynasty. Vishrava married into the Daitya dynasty. It's important. Her name was Kaikeshi. So before he married Kaikeshi, so Kaikeshi had a father, of course, and her father was in that line of Daityas. His name was Sumali. And Sumali's wife, we hear about her in Ramayana, her name was Tataka. And so they had one daughter and two sons. Sumali's daughter was Kaikeshi. And Sumali really wanted to have good progeny. So he looked high and low and left and right, and he decided the best person to have good progeny with his super qualified daughter Kaikeshi was Vishrava. So previously Vishrava was married and had as a son Kubera. And then with Kaikeshi, a number of children. First, the eldest being Ravana. So that means Ravana and Kuvera are stepbrothers. Vishrava, having a son, trained him. He trained him very thoroughly. Ravana was very learned in scripture. But his wife's father, Sumali, he was really determined. You got to be like the Daityas. He, really worked on him. And Ravana liked it. So then after completing his brahminical studies, Ravana went to perform austerities, severe austerities for years. He was doing things like Rikasura was doing, like cutting off pieces of flesh and he was cutting off his own head. And Lord Shiva was so kind, he produced a second head. He did it 9 times, so he ended up with 10 heads. That's why he got 10 heads. Finally, Lord Shiva said, what do you want? You want some benediction. You're doing these severe austerities. What do you want? I want your mortality. No, I won't give you immortality. Then I wanted to not be able to be killed by this one, that one, that one, that one, that one. Sound familiar? Yeah. Radhikashipu? This one, that one, that one, that one, that one. The one that he left out was humans. Because he's, you know, what's a human? So Ram appears a human to uphold the word of his devotee, Lord Shiva. And in addition, he was given some other benedictions by Lord Shiva. Weapons and mystic powers. So the two brothers, Ravana and Kuvera, before they were kind of like getting along. Now Kuvera is also a worshipper of Shiva. He's very dear to Lord Shiva. And because he's so dear to Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva made an arrangement with Vishwakarma to build a golden city that was the property of Kuvera. Now, before Ravana got all these benedictions from Lord Shiva, they kind of got along. But after he got all these powers, it all went, you know, he became overwhelmed with his own pride. And so he demanded of Kuvera, "If you give me the kingdom, or we'll do battle." They're brothers. Kuvera went to his father, Vishrava, "What should I do?" He said, "Now he has these benedictions from Lord Shiva, you won't be able to defeat him. You just give him Lanka." So without a battle, he took over Lanka, and he ruled in Lanka. And then that was where he consolidated his power. And he went here and there and everywhere and conquering people and fighting this one, you know, the demigods, and on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and practically invincible. Now, we'll go to the other side, and that's, you know, Sumali and Tataka. Their daughter was Kaikeshi, but the two sons, who were they? Maricha and Sumali. So Maricha and Sumali, the relationship with Maricha and Ravan is they were his wife's brother. So what do you call that in your family relation? The wife's brother. Brother-in-law. So when Ravana needed help, he went to his brother-in-law, because he had these mystic powers, and he was known as, you know, like extremely powerful person, and, you know, and very wise, and what to do. When he went to the first time, when he went to Maricha, Maricha said, "Forget it. Let me tell you how powerful is this Ram. He's not an ordinary person." And told him, you know, how Subahu was killed and the whole thing. And how he just barely, he had one arrow, and he's, you know, 30 miles carried in the air and crash. It's amazing I'm still alive. He's not an ordinary person. Don't mess. Go back. You know, forget kidnapping Sita. Although Suparnika wants to get you fired up to do that. She's meant for you. Woo, woo, woo. Only you should enjoy a beauty like hers. How can I get her? Don't even bother. But, you know, his lower nature, his lust, got the best of him. And brought his ruination. Ravana, after taking over Lanka, he then went to visit Lord Shiva. And Nandi saw that he was so proud and arrogant, he said, "You can't go see him." So Ravana started taunting and teasing and, you know, name-calling Nandi. And Nandi cursed him. You're a despicable person. I curse you that you'll be destroyed. The whole of Lanka will be destroyed by a monkey." And Ravana wanted to show how powerful he was. So he said, I'll show you how powerful I am. You're stopping me. And he started to lift the whole of Mount Kailash. He was so powerful. And when Lord Shiva saw this pride of his devotee, just with one foot on the top of Kailash, he pressed Kailash down and nearly squashed Ravana. For years he couldn't get out. And so to appease Lord Shiva for his offense, he got the message, I made a big offense, to try to lift the mountain, the residing place of my master. One of the arts that he had learned under the tutelage of his father, Vishrava, is he learned how to play musical instruments expertly. So his nerves were bulging out of his body, and he was played like a musical instrument, his nerves, very, very melodiously. And Lord Shiva was really impressed. This was pretty good. So he released his toe so he could get free from... He had learned his lesson. And then Lord Shiva gave him some benedictions. He gave him a very special sword and said, with the sword you can't be defeated. But if you misuse it in the wrong way, the sword will come back to my hand and you'll be destroyed. So Ram was looking at the destruction of Ravana as the killing of a Brahmana. So Ram teaching us, if you, even such an, this is the ideal king, if you do something, you atone for that something. So he asked Agastya, what should I do to atone for this act of killing a Brahmana? You know, others also advised Krishna. His own devotees advised Krishna. Who was the chief of his advisors? Uddhava. So does that mean Uddhava is supreme and Krishna is subordinate to the supreme Uddhava? No. It's the etiquette of a king asking the minister or asking the brahmana for guidance. So Agastya said, well, you're the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You don't need anything from me. But a suitable atonement for such a thing is you seek the forgiveness of Lord Shiva. You worship Lord Shiva. And auspicious time is just now coming for such worship. And Ram said, this is a very good suggestion. Where do you suggest we get a Shivalinga? Well, he said, you just go to Lord Shiva and he'll give you a Shivalinga. No problem. So Hanuman is ready to go take care of the service. So he, there goes Hanuman to approach Lord Shiva for the Shivalinga, to bring it back, and then Ram can worship Lord Shiva according to Agastya's recommendation. But when he got to the abode of Lord Shiva was in meditation. You don't disturb Lord Shiva when he's in meditation. So he sat down and he also meditated on the Supreme Lord, praying to the Supreme Lord that Lord Shiva would recognize his need and fulfill his need. So meanwhile, back in Rameshwaram, the auspicious time for doing the worship was passing. So Agastya said, we have to do something. We can't wait for Hanuman to come back from Kailash. So Sita volunteered with her own hand. She fashioned from sand a Shivalinga, something like, not the same as, but something like the gopis in Vrindavan when they wanted to worship Katyayani. They made a Katyayani from mud because they're simple village girls. They don't have marble capacity to hire a marble carver. They just made Katyayani from mud. So she made a Shivalinga from sand. And the proper mantras and so forth and so on, and the worship was completed. And within the auspicious period of time. And then Hanuman came back with the Shivalinga finally. And the worship was all over. So Hanuman, completely setting aside all the acts of heroism that he had done in service to Ram, considered himself an abject failure. I've been given a service, and I didn't properly carry it out. So it wasn't just like he felt bad or sorry. He was devastated. His mood of service is such. It wasn't, you know, wasn't a worldly lamentation. It was a transcendental mood of, I failed in my service to Ram. And he was sitting like ready to fast until death for having made this error. And there's a beautiful section where Ram, first he approaches, Ram is honoring him. You did this wonderful service. You did that wonderful service. You did so many wonderful services. He names them one after the next. You're such a hero. And I'm so indebted to you for all those services. And Hanuman's mood wasn't changing. He said, Hanuman, you can't fast until death. You can't give up your life. You have reunited me with Sita. And if you leave, who is going to reunite me with Bharat? Hanuman's mood wasn't changing. Ram started to cry. Please don't leave me. It was like a transcendental transformation of emotion. And then Sita and Lakshman started to cry, saying, you know, it's our offense. And, you know, we're to blame, and please don't do like this. No one knew what to do. Finally, the tears of Ram splashed on the body of Hanuman, and that revived him. So Ram said, so that your service has not gone in vain, if you wish, you can move this Shivalinga and place yours there. Go ahead. And Hanuman thinking, yes, that would be nice. So he tried to lift the Shivalinga, and he couldn't, with it, as strong as he was, and he couldn't lift it. He wrapped his tail around it and lifted it, and his blood started coming out of his tail. And Ram said, it's not possible. You can't lift this. It's rooted down to the Patala region, although it was just fashioned by Sita's hand. That's not possible. Don't feel that you're a failure again. You can't move this. It wasn't meant to be moved. Once established by Sita's hand, that's it. It will never move. But you can establish your Shivalinga over there. And anybody in the future that comes may worship this Shivalinga, your Shivalinga, then this Shivalinga, and take their bath in Dhanushkoti, and all of their sins are mitigated. Because all this was about relieving himself of the sin of having killed the Brahmana. And within that pastime, so many nice lessons, so many nice loving exchanges. This is part of the instructive nature of Ram's pastimes. The churning of emotion of Ram's pastimes. When you hear it narrated by somebody more qualified than me, the pastimes of the feelings of Hanuman, of feelings of love of Hanuman, the feelings of Lakshman and Sita, the feelings of Ram, it just turns transcendental emotion while at the same time teaching proper conduct. You know, civil conduct, social conduct, proper respect for all living entities. And once again, the pastime isn't even in Valmiki Ramayana. It doesn't even happen. But Lord Chaitanya went to the place. So we honor that place because Lord Chaitanya went to that place. The group that I was with, just to wrap up, the group that I was with, when I said to them that at this place, Dhanushkoti, Lord Ramachandra gave a benediction that anyone who takes bath there, all their sinful reactions will be mitigated. It's like so far out of the way. And when you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada quotes from Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, which was written before the, whatever it was, tornado or cyclone or something, wiped out the whole of Dhanushkoti. In Bhaktisiddhanta's purport, he says that Dhanushkoti is at the end of the such and such railway station as the final stop on the railway line. But after that cyclone or tornado or whatever it was, it ripped up, the whole town was destroyed, and the train track was also destroyed. But our, you know, President Modi, President or Prime Minister? Prime Minister Modi is going to use government money to restore the train. So you can go to the Dhanushkoti and take your bath at Dhanushkoti. But it's like way out there. Way out there. Now you can only drive a certain distance and then it's just sand dunes and, you know, like a sandy peninsula sticking out. But they're going to build the train station that goes all the way to the end. That's what they say they're going to do. One last little thing. Some of you may be Nrisinga Bhaktas. Any Nrisinga Bhaktas in the audience here? You like Lord Nrisingadeva and have a Nrisinga deity at home? Kind of? Yeah? Okay. I was told a story, and some ardent Nrisinga worshippers don't like this story. But anyway, it's a Prabhupada story. This goes at a time when Achyutananda and Yasodhanandana were traveling in South India under instruction of Prabhupada to gather some understanding of deity worship. So one of the places they went to was Ahovalam. And when they went to Ahovalam, they were taken to all the different temples, and the one that's way up on the top, where there's a colored stick with lines on it, indicating this is where the pillar that Lord Nrisingadeva appeared from. You familiar?
Yes.
What I'm speaking about? So after they did this tour and they heard all this, they asked Prabhupada, is this really the place where Lord Nrisingadeva appeared? Because Lord Nrisingadeva appeared where Hiranyakashipu had taken residence, and Hiranyakashipu had conquered the King of Heaven. And so wasn't that on Indraloka, the place from which Lord Nrisingadeva appeared? Right? That was their question. And Prabhupada said, yes, but because of years and years and years and generations and centuries of worship, the place is not different than that place from which Lord Nrisingadeva appeared. So it's something like, in the seven purposes of ISKCON, Prabhupada speaks of establishing places of pastime of Krishna as one of the purposes of ISKCON. Now, how do you do that? Krishna has to appear, perform pastime, and that is a place of pastime. So installing deities and worshipping deities and deities exchanging with the devotees, that's establishing a place of pastime of Krishna. Yes? So Ahovalam is such a place, and Rameshwaram is such a place. Whether Ramchandra, according to Valmiki Ramayana, didn't appear there, or other versions of Ramayana did appear there, the place of worship is such So such a long period of time where Ram is worshipped in that mood. And I learned one other thing. I thought I was done, but one other thing. The devotee that was with me explained, and again I can't remember his name, regional secretary for Shankaranya. Shankadari. Who said? Shankadari. Okay, yeah, Shankadari. Thank you. Shankadari said, I've heard this before, but he was confirming. Normal procedure for all Shivalingas is at the base of the Shivalinga. There's multiple Shalagram Shilas. Did you know that? So when they're worshipping Shivalinga, they're actually worshipping Lord Narayana in his form of Shalagram Shilas. You know what a Shalagram Shila is? No idea. It's a worshipable form that doesn't require installation. It looks like a stone, but according to Vedic teachings, it's the stone is and Narayana are non-different. Shalagram Shila. And the altar in Detroit, is there a Shalagram Shila? No? In New York, there's a Shalagram Shila. Prabhupada writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita that in temples where we have Radha Krishna worship, in time I plan to have Shalagram Shilas installed wherever there's Radha Krishna worship. I mean, it doesn't have to be tomorrow, but there are some places that do and some places that don't. So at the base, you know what a Shivalinga is? It's a mound, like a conical, a cone shaped protrusion from the ground up, and it's a form of Lord Shiva, Shivalinga, and Lord Shiva is worshipped by pouring milk and other substances, the bathing, the abhishek of a deity of Lord Shiva. At the base of that deity is Shalagram Shila, is Vishnu worship, recognizing, this is even for Shaivites, they recognize, you know, in older times, modern times, there's so many things change, but olden times, they understood. This is worship of Lord Vishnu and the devotee of Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva. That was the understanding. So much is being lost. That's one of the so many things being lost. So even when Ram was worshipping Shivalinga, he's worshipping Lord Vishnu. Got it? Although the Shivalinga was fashioned by the hand of Sita. And in the temple, this Rameshwaram temple, there's fantastic artwork depicting all this Leela, because it's like it's core to their livelihood, as much as in, you know, Vrindavan, it's Krishna playing upon his flute and herding the cows with the cowherd boys, as much as that is so essential, or Krishna and the gopis and their rasa dances, whatever, you know, the Vrindavan Leela is so essential. In Rameshwaram, it's also so essential. This whole thing with Agastya Muni and Ram at his feet and looking up to Agastya Muni, what should I do to atone for the sin, and giving this arrangement. Hanuman, zoom, zoom, going to get, coming back late, the whole pastime. It's all Leela to enhance or churn the emotions of his devotee, give his devotee some service, show by example what does an ideal king do. Although he's all powerful, he just killed this terrible demon, he's feeling remorse for human-like remorse for having killed this Brahmana, although he's not a Brahmana, but by birth he was a Brahmana. wonderful pastimes of Lord Ramachandra, teaching us so many lessons and so many levels. If we don't understand his divinity, put it this way, if one does not have the opportunity to hear from a devotee, one will not understand his divinity. On the other hand, if one hears from a devotee, and a devotee that has heard from the proper sources of devotion, then his pastimes are just so marvelous. They're so charming and enchanting. They steal one's heart. And therefore, intimacy-wise, it's at the topmost regions of Haridham. Even beyond that topmost regions of Haridham is Golokadham. And then that has its regions of Dwaraka, Mathura, and Vrindavan. And most intimate of all is Vrindavan because of the intimacy of love. The intimacy of love is so strong. And then in Mathura, it's intimacy a little bit eclipsed by majesty. And then in Dwaraka, it's majesty. But still intimacy. And in Ayodhya, going down, you know, majesty and intimacy. And Haridham, majesty. And Lord Shiva's abode, meditating upon his majesty. And in Haridham, maya. Forgetting, trying to remember, struggling hard to remember the loving nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and our eternal relationship with him, which we so foolishly walked away from. So to inspire us to the position of devotion once again, wonderful literatures like Ramayana are there to teach us so many lessons of proper conduct and attachment to the lotus feet of the Personality of Godhead. That's a warm-up for inspiring you to read something and meditate upon Lord Ramchand's pastimes. Any discussion? Comments or questions? Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Sita is an expansion of Radha, as Rama is an expansion of Krishna. Yeah. Well, he had his hand up first behind you. Go ahead.
One of the beautiful teaching we hear is in an attempt to love everyone is that everyone is inherently good. Like hate the sin, not the sinner. That teaching that everyone is inherently good. Even if they do bad activities, we should see how they are asking for love. You know, everyone is inherently good person asking for love. Keeping that teaching, and then we hear that God created Daityas, that Sura and Asura. So he seems some people were inherently created bad.
Some people hold that view. Prabhupada didn't teach that view. Prabhupada did not teach that view. You know, it gets into the fall of the jiva question. Some people hold some living entities are just bad, and some living entities are good, and it's eternally like that. The bad can become good, but they're, you know, the bad. So, there are some people that hold that view. They have the reasons why they hold that view. You know, one of the reasons, it gets into the fall of the jiva topic. How could one, in a relationship with the Personality of Godhead, ever leave that relationship? Not possible. Since that's not possible, there has to be another explanation. Some living entities are just eternally like this. Some people hold that point of view. Prabhupada didn't teach that.
Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says, Arjuna, I know you are not like that, but there are some like that.
But that's a free will choice. The way that Prabhupada has taught us is the living entity's misuse of free will. They're not inherently bad. They have misuse of free will. They're inherently tatastha. And inherently, Prabhupada said it many times, living entities are inherently good. But if they misuse their free will, they go in that other direction. There's the healthy state and the diseased state. The diseased state is not the natural state. The asura position is not the natural state. There is a natural state. And how does one get by misuse of free will? And therefore, living entities can revive the original Krishna consciousness. The potential is there. The healthy state is natural. Okay? Yes?
When Srimad Bhagavatam describes Krishna's pastimes, it's not complete because the six Goswamis and other acharyas also compile so many pastimes. And we take that as...
When you say it's not complete, what does that mean?
Well,
That which is unlimited has not unlimitedly been expressed because, you know, there's volumes and volumes.
The same way, is there a reason why Valmiki Muni did not include this Dhanushkoti pastime and later it was written by other acharyas?
That's an interesting speculation. I don't know. You'd have to ask Valmiki.
So if Valmiki is not, what other scripture are we getting this information?
Well, there's many versions of Ramayana. Shukadeva Goswami says it in the ninth canto. There's many versions of Ramayana. Many versions of Mahabharata. The Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a narration of one of them. And it's not Vyasadeva Mahabharata. But it's spoken of by Sanatana Goswami in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, another version of Ramayana. There's two different questions. The answer is yes. We followers in ISKCON are recommended to read Valmiki Ramayana. Now there's different versions of Valmiki Ramayana out there in the universe. When the Vedic Planetarium was doing their Pramana, their scriptural research, they used a certain Ramayana, you know, verse by verse Ramayana as, you know, their standard for, because there's so many Valmiki Ramayanas, what to speak of other Ramayanas. So, you know, it's coming from a strict Sri Sampradaya line, and it's, you know, it's available. There's a website for it. And then there's others that are others. Besides, you know, the verses in Sanskrit, the translations, are, you know, both are, you know, in conflict with some other versions. So, you know, what's the standard? Can we read other Ramayanas? Yes. Support for saying that is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur honors the Rameshwaram pastime, and Lord Chaitanya went there. He honors the Rameshwaram pastime, and it's not within Valmiki Ramayana. And yes, it's certainly possible that he didn't, you know, it wasn't everything, it was, that part just wasn't narrated, and perhaps it did happen. That's, you know, it's a possibility. But so we, Shukadeva Goswami says, and then Prabhupada gives the purport for, I'll only speak of the authentic versions, plural, which means there's multiple authentic versions. So, how do we decide which are the authentic versions from our acharyas? We're not qualified to, otherwise, you know, so if you don't know, don't go there. It's really simple. Really simple. In Gopi Puranadana, his rendering of Tattva Sandarbha, there's this whole Pramana section, and Pramana, or what the best form of Pramana is Shabda, and Shabda literally means from a reliable source. Now, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the most reliable source, but there may be other reliable sources. Shruti, heard from a reliable source, is the literal meaning. like, you know, if you want to know, what time the flight is going to leave that you have a booking for, you can ask somebody on the street, or you can ask, you know, call the airlines, and that's the reliable source to find out what time the flight is leaving. And even then, they could, you know. So, Shruti Praman means literally, it's a long explanation, but hearing from a reliable source. Hearing from a reliable source. So, from our acharyas, they identify which are reliable sources of various ramayanas. And if you don't know, don't go there. It's much safer. Now then, there's popular, without going into it, there's popular stuff. Popular Mahabharats and popular Ramayanas. My experience is, you know, those popular sources can train people up to believe a certain thing is such and such when it's completely in contradiction to Srimad Bhagavatam. I mean, it really bothers me, because people are lazy. I'll give two examples. The Sagar series on Mahabharat, they closely consulted ISKCON, because they considered ISKCON as authentic. But he didn't stay with that. He did other things too. And the two of the things just really bother me. People grow up because they're lazy to read. They watch the video, and the video tells them when Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die, he sat up on a tall pole really high because it was a snake that was going to get him. So he was afraid, so he sat up on a tall pole. Not so. Another one. When Maharaj Parikshit, was ready to kill the personality of Kali, Kali pleaded, "Please give me shelter." Well, you can, where there's sin, well, there isn't sin in your kingdom. Well, wherever there's hoarding of gold. And the video shows the personality of Kali goes zoom into the crown of Maharaj Parikshit. So now Maharaj Parikshit is, with his golden crown, is going to get, you know, bad because of the presence of the personality of Kali. And then Maharaj Parikshit, comes to the hermitage of Shamak Rishi, the personality of Kali is kind of like inducing Maharaj Parikshit to do something awful because he's influenced by the personality of Kali. No way. No way. But people see that on the movie, and that's what happens, you know, as far as they're concerned. So not hearing from the right source is a big problem. I feel very fortunate in one sense. I recently flew back from India to America, and the person right next to me was a motel owner from El Paso, Texas, a Gujarati man. And he was a follower of Chinmoyananda. I mean, he didn't say right away, but, you know, saying, you know, said, you're chanting, are you a member of ISKCON? I said, yes. Anyway, long discussion on a lot of topics. But one of the points was, you know, you're quoting a lot of Sanskrit verses. Do you read Sanskrit? And I said, no, but I know Sanskrit verses because I hear them all the time. He said, wow, you know, I don't know so many Sanskrit verses, and I study all the time. He said, well, it comes from hearing. But, you know, there's an advantage. Do you have a natural attraction for Krishna, just, you know, from your birth? See, Punya Bhumi. And I've come from the other place. You know, culture of no culture place. So there's a disadvantage and an advantage. But then there's an advantage over here, and the advantage over here is I don't know anything. And you think you know something. So So to teach a person who thinks he knows something is more difficult than teaching a person who knows he doesn't know anything. He said, you're right. He said, you're like a blank slate. I said, yeah. Take any word, you know, Sanskrit word, I don't know what it means. He said, sadhana. I don't know what that word means, but I've heard it so many times from so many different angles, now I know what sadhana means. You have a different idea, and you hear for the same different things, and it's not going to change because you already have an idea. So you have the advantage of piety, and I have the advantage of innocence. Ignorance, but you know, innocence, and wanting to know. And you may want to know, but you've got this mountain of things that you think you know to overcome. And that's one of the reasons why we chant. There's to cleanse the heart. Jetu Darpana Marginum. And I said, okay, now I understand. Because that was his first question. Why so much emphasis on chanting? I go to the internet to find out about ISKCON and all these YouTube things about chanting. What's the deal? That was how the conversation started. Anything else out there? Anyone? Okay. Well, where's the box of Mahaprasadam? Okay. I asked the Pujari this morning, worships, well, actually the last 3 days, to provide me some Mahaprasadam from Radha Govinda, and he gave me a box. Mahaprasadam from Radha Govinda. So, if you will allow me, I'll walk around and give you some Mahaprasadam from Radha Govinda. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.